Good afternoon, everybody. Today it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Gaetano Borriello, who is presenting on Open Data Kit, open source mobile data collection. There's more information on the handout that's circulating, but some key things that I wanted to highlight was his work in mobile systems and ubiquitous computing for many years, the involvement with the Change Group, which is a group that's, in a sense, a sister group to the work that a lot of the folks in biomedical health informatics are doing, and some folks in BHI are involved with Change, but not everybody, and his work both in computer science, information science, and electrical engineering in the space that he's been working in. And rather than cut more into his presentation, I'll let him go into a lot more detail about all of the above. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you, Pete. Okay, so the topic for today is Open Data Kit, which is this project I've been working on for the last couple of years, and with a lot of these nice students at the bottom here who've done all the work. And what we're trying to address is the problem of mobile data collection. You know, as you can imagine, the current paper-based processes that are out there are pretty inefficient. But moving to electronic system presents its own set of challenges as well as opportunities. And, you know, the current practice is that paper forms still dominate. That's the space. They're seemingly cheap and easy to train for. Everyone knows how to use a pencil and paper, right? No issues there. And physical collection, however, tends to be slow and expensive. You have to move them around physically and keep track of them. There's a lot of data transcription issues, not only the potential errors that can be introduced, but also the cost in doing that and the amount of time it takes. Often there's a significant lag between the time that the data was collected and when it's actually put into an aggregated, useful form. And probably the most frustrating thing for a lot of people is that they know there's some historical data that's relevant to a situation at hand, but can't get access to that data because it either hasn't been entered yet or isn't in the right form yet, or it hasn't been properly connected to the data that they, to the situation that they have. So the trend now is to try to use mobile devices to do this. But there's some interesting challenges here too. You now have some less familiar and potentially quite a bit more complex user interfaces for people to have to deal with. The devices that you might use, especially the cheaper mobile devices that are common in the developing world context where we do a lot of our work, are fairly limited in the amount of processing they can do, storage, and even the transmission of data. It's not like a lot of people have data plan set up where that culture is really prevalent yet. Another issue is that there's a lot of interesting features to higher-end mobile devices these days, like location tracking and multimedia, that is just not available on the cheaper devices, the basic phones that are prevalent in Sub-Saharan Africa, for example. In addition, we have issues with hard-to-maintain databases, setting up servers, and all the infrastructure that entails. Another roadblock is the seemingly high cost over paper of these kinds of devices. Okay, especially as we start talking about the smartphones and several hundred dollars for a device can be an issue. So mobile platforms have, of course, evolved, and they're going to continue to evolve. In fact, 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't even be talking about cell phones in sub-Saharan Africa. They weren't that common. In fact, the first attempts at trying to do mobile data collection were done with PDAs. You remember those, right? Palm Pilots and iPacks and things like that that seem, ancient history these days. But 10 years ago, these were the only programmable platforms really available. And there were some ruggedized versions of these things that could work in these environments. Now they're mostly obsolete and out of the picture. They've been replaced by what are called feature phones, phones that are a little bit above the basic voice and SMS phone, phones that actually can have a small application loaded onto them to run some new software. Okay. And a good example of this is some of the stuff provided by Datadyne, a program called EpiSurveyor, which is probably the most common data collection tool, a mobile data collection tool out there today. And it runs on these J2ME devices, Java programming environment. But it's not a very uniform programming environment. There's a lot of nuances and details associated with each model of phone that have to be often tailored specifically. And they have very limited user interfaces, mostly just the 12 keys on the phone most of the time, and you're doing things with text input. So that can be pretty laborious, as many of you have probably dealt with cell phones of this variety. These were the common cell phones a few years back, even here. And, you know, they can get pretty annoying. You forget how to do things. It's hard to find stuff again. Now we have smartphones and netbooks kind of filling in the gap between mobile devices and laptops. And they have much more flexible programming environments. There's Android phones that run Java, Windows mobile phones that run C Sharp, so pretty modern, full-featured set of tools, and they do a lot richer data. They can they have built-in GPS for location tracking. They have built-in cameras to take pictures and video. You can record audio and many other things that are coming down the road. These are rapidly becoming available in all markets, including in the developing world, but they're not particularly prevalent yet. They're not very, they're still kind of status symbols. So you can think about the usage models for these different kinds of devices. Sort of the cheapest phones are what the general population you can expect to have. And those phones are just going to be able to do voice and SMS. And so at best, you can use those to do some things like a basic search service, for example. Send an SMS message to a phone number, run a little search through a database, get some information. Some things that have been very successful at this have been things like a clinic finder and health tips for HIV and things like that. Weather for farmers, market prices, things like that. As we go to feature phones, we can start thinking about citizens actually collecting some interesting data themselves. Of course, this can be very useful for explaining the availability of resources in a location, reporting disease, for example, in an outbreak. But of course, this needs verification. You can't trust all of these information sources. And as we mentioned with feature phones, the data is not that rich yet. You can't exactly add location easily or photographs easily or things like that. Smartphones, at least for now, are things that are used by professionals. You know, sort of an employee that you would have that would you would give a smartphone to. They probably couldn't afford it on their own. So these are mostly, you know, hired data collectors that work for an NGO or a government organization. People like community health workers or shared phone operators and some of the Grameen Foundation models of doing this, you know, the guy with the phone booth in the local village who has access to lots of information services. This is where we sit in our work. Okay, we're looking towards the future when these devices will become more common and easier to have access to. We actually have not had any problem getting people access to these devices, even in very rural areas of Africa right now. So it's not a big issue, and we imagine 5 to 10 years from now, these will be the common devices. Another thing that people bring up is the cost of these kind of smartphones. You know, they are potentially an order of magnitude more costly than the cheaper feature phones that these days run $30 to $50. But the total cost of the system is rarely considered. Yes, the handset is more expensive. However, we have much richer data types. We can do faster data entry and more varied data entry. We can minimize transportation, user time, training costs. Maintenance of the software, development of new tools. All of these things are factors in a system cost. And what we have to do is translate that into measures of how does that allow you to cover more people, be more efficient at what you're doing, make decisions more quickly. And those can have an even bigger impact on the total system cost. So these things are not typically factored in. And we believe, at least right now, that smartphones are more than cost effective in a lot of these situations. They justify their added price. Again, for the situation of those professionals using the phone. We're not talking about just general population. But we have to prove this, and some of the projects that we're involved with are seeking to get the raw data to prove that. Okay, so let me tell you now about the project itself and what we're trying to do. That set a little bit of context for the technology space that we're trying to move into. What we set out to do with ODK, Open Data Kit, was to make a set of tools that was highly modular and customizable, so that organizations could pick them up and use them in pieces, maybe make their own specialized little piece to connect to the stuff that they can get from us, basically get past this idea of siloed solutions, enterprise solutions, you know, those nice big packages of software you buy from a company that gives you everything, you would ever need, except 2 months from now when you find something that they don't do. And then you can't do anything about it yourself. So we wanted to step around that and make this world a little bit more flexible, more approachable by organizations that are very money conscious. Okay. So the other thing we set out to do is say, you know, we want tools that are going to evolve with dominant technology trends. We don't want to be tied to some old technology, whether it's software or hardware, that is not going to be easy to move forward. And when all new kinds of mobile devices come out 5 years from now, we're not going to be able to use any of the stuff we have. Repeat the PDA problem that we had 10 years ago. So we want to avoid that. And we want to build an open source community around these tools to help drive the project forward. So the metaphor that we use is, you know, we want to try to build the sort of the molecular model, right? Be able to snap together little parts using standard interfaces rather than proprietary solutions, so that anyone can come along and add a new atom to the mix and build their own molecule that they want for their solution. Okay, so the model that we're using for information, we started off thinking about community health workers. That was our primary motivator. And community health workers, as I'm sure many of you know, are people who go around house to house, village to village, getting information about the health status of whatever they happen to be interested in for the organization they work for. And that data has to get back in, back to some infrastructure somewhere that is going to then make that data available to various stakeholders. Everyone from their immediate supervisors that are going to want to know what they're really doing, to the local health clinic that might have to follow up with particular patients, all the way to the Ministry of Health that might look at highly aggregated data to just get a general sense of what's going on. In response, these organizations may have tasks to send back to the community health, hey, find out more about this, go visit this guy again because we got to follow up on this therapy he's doing. Okay, and that gives them more things to do. So that closes the loop. What we found, though, is that this model is actually pretty common for a lot of situations. For example, if you replace the community health worker with a forest worker and the people with trees, you have a forest monitoring application. Exactly the same thing is going on. Okay, we're collecting data about trees and their well-being and plots of land. Same kinds of stakeholders are out there trying to figure out what's going on. And they're going to want to know more information about a particular situation. So very similar set of things. Again, potentially people in very dispersed environments, rural situations, especially in this case, and not easy to travel back and forth. So you want people able to do this with mobile devices. So we put together a basic set of ODK tools to help with this, these kinds of situations. And the basic tools are what we call ODK Collect, which helps us get data. That's what runs on the actual physical device. ODK Build, which lets you design the forms to put the data into. That's a tool that actually runs on a web interface, lets you develop the tool. Submit, which moves the data around and figures out the best transport mechanism to move the data. Sometimes you might want to use a cellular network. Sometimes you might want to use Wi-Fi that's available in a clinic. Sometimes you might want to just use the physical device itself and the storage card in it and not use any wireless technology at all. So we want to make sure we can support all of these. And then aggregate, which is our storage module, which gets the data that moves from the device that was collected using Collect on a form build by build, and puts it into a database on a server. And basically presents that information then to people who want to see it and visualize that data using spreadsheets, using maps, whatever charting tools that they might have available. So what we wanted to do was provide all of these pieces so that you could get a pilot deployment going by just getting a couple of phones. And you could actually get started doing a small pilot study very quickly. You don't have to go worry about setting up your own server. You don't have to develop new software. It's easy to all configure, to put on the device. We use Android Market to move the software onto your phone and those kinds of things. So let me tell you a little about each of these tools. ODK Collect, as I mentioned, is the tool that lets you render a form, show it on the mobile device. It uses a standard called XForms that a lot of NGOs have gotten together into a consortium called the Java Rosa Consortium to come up with the appropriate subset of this very large W3C specification that can do things as complex as the federal tax forms. And we didn't need all of that functionality. So we have a more limited set of things that is appropriate for us. We've added to that the ability to support other data types, like, as I mentioned, location, photos, et cetera. The other nice thing about XForms is it allows you to have logic in the form. So depending on the answer to one question, you get a different next question. So you can do things like flowcharts, for example, and simple protocols. You can also have constraints on the input so that you can check the input that somebody puts into a field and say, you know, that doesn't have enough digits. I need more digits. Or that's a date in the future. I need a date in the past. Things like that. Okay? And it supports multiple languages. If you could see that screen, it's in Swahili down there. Okay? So the form renderer then takes that information. These are just screens from those forms. Here's a simple text question that just asks you to enter a name. This is another question that allows you to check multiple boxes. A date widget to be able to enter a date, like a birth date. A way to get a location and replace the location, get a new GPS reading. It includes latitude, longitude, altitude, and accuracy. And also a way to navigate the form, see all of the questions in the form and your current responses to them, and say, you know, I need to go back and change that answer, or let me just review those questions again. So we have ways of doing that. And all of this information that's entered on these forms gets stored on the local SD card on the phone. So it goes into physical storage on the device, and then gets transferred later by submit. And that transfer might be a direct file transfer, just from taking the card physically out of the phone and sticking it into a PC or a laptop, or it might be sending it over the wireless network, the cellular network, to get that data through. And that, of course, depends on the exact model. So we've had customers using our stuff who don't want to give their community health workers data plans because they say, oh, they'll use them for a million different things. We'll have to deal with the whole issue of recharging those SIM cards all the time. So what we're going to do is just set up a little Wi-Fi next to our computer in the clinic. And they come back to the clinic every couple of days anyway. They'll transfer the data then. All right, so they're happy with that solution. So we wanted to support a few different models there. ODK Build is a nice application that runs on the web. It has a drag-and-drop interface that allows you to put together a set of questions. Here's showing a text question that I've called enter your first name, a location question that'll trigger the GPS unit on the phone, a date widget, and a camera question that'll ask you to take a picture. Okay? And you can put those together on the web, give them names, and then once you're done with that application, with this form, you can move it onto the phone for somebody to use to start collecting data, and you also send it to our server so that the server can look at the form and say, oh, this form's got four fields and there are these types and I'm going to need this database for that, and creates the storage space for all those answers to go into. And basically gives you a URL to go to see all the answers everyone submitted. Okay? So all of that's done by just making the form on the web. So again, not a whole bunch of separate programming steps. Okay. The server solution then takes all that data, puts, you know, can make it available in the spreadsheet. This is showing, you know, column for every question, row for every submission. If those things have location associated with them, as these do, they can be put on a map. And you can browse them geographically and look at different, different little markers on the map and see what data was entered. Even the pictures that might have been associated with that data are all linked there. Okay. And as I mentioned, we've provided an out-of-the-box server solution on the Google Cloud so that you have a place to just use if you don't want to bother doing anything quite yet. But we recognize that, in fact, people will have a need to have their own server. Sometimes this data is sensitive. You don't want it going out of the country you're operating in. It's particularly privacy conscious or politically sensitive. So we also have non-cloud server solutions available. They use the exact same interface. And all you have to do is provide the appropriate name of that server, and then the data goes to the new server. But it looks exactly the same as what you might have seen on the cloud. Okay? But that assumes a next step that you're setting up your own server. And we didn't want to have that be a barrier to entry, or at least not to do a pilot. Okay. And then visualize, of course, is just a way of pulling up all that data on the, in this case, showing a map interface. This is on Google Earth using a KML layer. For every push pin was a data source. You can then go click on a push pin, see the data associated with that entry. These were the, can't read those, but those were the questions in the form and the data that was entered. And this was a picture associated with that situation there. So this might have been a survey of plots of land in a forest monitoring application. Okay. So we've taken this stuff to a few places to try it out. Our first deployment goes back now almost a year and a half to November 2008. We used shared phone operators in Uganda to help them fill out surveys about the web services they were providing their local customers in their rural villages. Again, shared phone operators, think of as the village internet kiosk, right? It's somebody who runs a little business out of that thing, if you're not familiar with that model. So ODK was used by Grameen App Lab to collect surveys about these services, and they've since collected tens of thousands of surveys. That's a little dated now. And had a great time using this and were able to get information about what the farmers thought about the service. Were they actually going to act on the information that they were provided? Who did they think the information came from? Why did they trust or not trust the information? How much would they be willing to pay for it? This was just simple survey stuff. Okay, and at this time, since we were just getting started, I was sending my students to Uganda to do this. These were the areas where they did their work. The blue dots are where phone operators were. The red dots are where they did a couple of training sessions with about 20 shared phone operators involved. I have to send two students. I have to send one to keep the kids busy, and the other one to do the water pump. No, they were also doing training sessions here and here. But there's a lot of things to coordinate in these environments. Another project, and probably our largest deployment to date, is with an HIV monitoring program in rural Kenya run by AMPATH. and this is for HIV medication monitoring and how well patients are doing. They're trying to cover a couple of million people in their catchment area with several hundred community health workers. And this lady here is using the phone to scan a patient barcode. So patients are given a barcode as an ID card identifier. And what we can do is actually just use the camera on the phone with an existing application to just scan that barcode and eliminate any errors in transcription of patient IDs. So she's just getting used to that process in one of our training sessions. And there's a little bit of detail about this program. What's interesting about this one is that the data that they're collecting is not going back to a cloud server, but is going into a medical record system, OpenMRS, that this group uses in Kenya. So they're actually pushing the data into their own servers, and we have a module that connects to that kind of database to make analysis and follow-up easier to do. Okay, and these are some pictures from the deployment in Eldoret. Just a little bit of color there. The last deployment I want to tell you about is a project we did with some colleagues at Google who were interested in forest monitoring. And they were working closely with the Brazilian Forest Service and indigenous tribes in Brazil. These are two members of the Surui tribe in the Amazon near the Bolivian border. And they got to use our phones to monitor their forest that they have a strong interest, cultural and livelihood interest, in keeping intact, and are now trying to get into the carbon credit system to show what value their forest has standing rather than cut down. And because they're realizing that that's the only way they're really going to be able to protect it in the courts and all the systems involved in the world. So, in this case, both the Surui, members of the Surui tribe and forest workers for Brazil got to use this stuff and do monitoring of different plots of land. The Surui were also interested in mapping their cultural sites in the forest and building up a database of information. This is coupled with satellite imagery that's taken from above to look at the state of forests. But that's been shown not to provide enough information, so you do want to have in situ monitoring as well, and eventually try to do a better job of training the satellite software to do a better job of mapping information. We're now, this project is expanding into Tanzania and Cambodia, where there's other forest monitoring groups, and they're all sharing forms between each other, because we're doing these things in a nice standard format that they can all use. Okay. So ODK has been spreading around the world. We're, I think, on four or five continents now, various kinds of projects. You've seen a couple ranging from healthcare to forest monitoring. There's also some stuff related to documenting war crimes, a project with the UC Berkeley Human Rights Center in the Central African Republic. There's some folks using this stuff to monitor school activities and attendance in India, where that's a major issue in getting information about how rural schools are being run. So as I mentioned, our deployment strategy has been that our basic toolkit supports out-of-the-box pilots. We want to have basically all you have to get is a couple of phones and you can get started going on doing this. The idea is that you should be able to experiment quickly, collect some data, show it to your stakeholders, get some feedback, design your own forms, get the data the way you want it to be, put yourself in a position to include that stuff in a funding proposal, and get funding to expand the program. And we want that to be as easy as possible. Then we can start talking about how, now given the things you really want to accomplish, what is it going to take to make some new modules, add new functionality? As those things become common across the community, how do we bring it back in and share it again with the rest of the group? These kinds of things. Just recently, This was just put on the web in the last couple of days. Columbia University's Earth Institute did a forestry study in Mali, in Central Africa, and this was their conclusion from using our software exactly in this strategy. You know, just trying something out of the box, getting started, and they found that they were able to do everything they needed to do with the system as it was, and now are looking at, well, do we really need our own server? Can we just keep using this? It's a lot easier than doing our own server. Can we talk the Mali government into letting us do that? They already have half a dozen different forms that they're trying to figure out how to get people to use, and they want a little planner for their workers to be able to decide what to do when and things like that. So they're looking at some of those kinds of tools. We're also working on different tools to add to the kit. This is a list of stuff that's kind of at various stages of development. Some of them are just ideas. Some of them are almost ready to be released. One example is ODK Store. I mentioned the local storage solution. That's already out there starting to get used. ODK Manage actually lets you manage a large number of phones remotely from a web interface and be able to see all of the phones you have out in the field, what their phone numbers are, even if people change SIM cards in them, so you can still call the person with the phone, and what forms each phone has on them, send them new forms, send them new data to use, those kinds of things. We have a project called ODK Voice that a student at MIT is working on with us. Which actually uses the same kind of forms, but records sound to go with the questions. So it actually has a person asking the question, and then actually makes a phone call to a person's own phone and asks them those questions, and they can just answer with the keypad. And the idea there is to be able to do simple follow-up questions. After you've given somebody a bunch of medications to take for their condition and sent them home to a remote village, you might still want to call them every few days and see if they're having any side effects, if they're taking the medication, remind them to take the medication, those kinds of things. Okay? So this is an attempt to spread out and use the phones that people have. Some other things that are out there are going back to the original Cyber Tracker, the first data collection tool that I mentioned on PDAs, and re-implementing that on Android phones. That tool was particularly attractive because it did everything with icons. So it was really targeting illiterate populations. And so we're doing some things related to that. We're doing some work with protocols and being able to do triage and diagnostics quickly and efficiently without having to go through the entire flowchart every time. So we're looking at some of those kinds of things. You know, just to give you an example, this is a page from the IMCI booklet that asks questions about a child's condition and tries to decide whether this child needs to see a doctor because they have an acute condition. Or you can give some advice to the parent who brought the kid in, and you know, they can probably do okay at home if they know what to do. And a lot of it involves around teaching them how to keep the kid hydrated, for example, things like that. And one of the things we'd like to do is be able to have this advice be more explicit in its instructions, more likely to be understood. So, for example, include videos of people from the same community showing how they prepare solutions for hydration of the child and what they do. That, and be able to actually show the person on the phone, here's what you need to do at home. Do you have questions about this process? And not do it with Western person explaining it, but actually with local populations. And so we want to be able to both film the video and show the video locally. So we're looking at some of these things like that. The nice thing about this is as you take people through this kind of protocol, you get the data collection for free. You have a record of the visit. As you've answered the questions and worked through the flowchart, you already have documented the visit. You don't have to do a separate step of entering this in a ledger or entering it in a database of some kind. Okay. OpenMRS, we're looking at how do we get the information out of the database and onto the phone so that when you do a patient visit and enter a bunch of information about somebody, it also is possible for someone on the web to look at all the visits that were done by a particular person in a particular clinic or a particular community health worker and actually bring up the same pictures that that person took of that situation and maybe offer advice going back in the other direction. We're also looking at in-clinic use of data, the coordination between labs and physicians, for example, trigger new data entry when different conditions arise. I mentioned manage already, so I won't bother with that. Okay, so to start to close this up, and then I want to hear what you think of all this stuff, is we're trying to expand our community here and the people who use this stuff. And we've made all of our code freely available on the web. It's actually available for you to do whatever you want with it, with absolutely no restrictions whatsoever. All we ask is maybe a little shout out that you got it from us, you know, that kind of thing. And it's kind of nice to see even organizations like Johns Hopkins have built a large application of their own around our tools for community health worker training in Uganda. And so one of their organizations is doing that. They've added a nice little training module that does little quizzes and things like that all around these forms. You know, it's always built as a form so that it follows the same model. But they can do those kind of things with teaching classes and getting students to help develop those new tools. We've done one interesting thing that's been very helpful to a couple of our customers, which is we've engaged with an IT consultancy in Boston called Damagi, which has gotten very familiar with ODK and works very closely with us. And they actually will do work for hire, so that if somebody needs a particular module built and doesn't have in-house talent to do it, they can use this nonprofit organization and pay them for their time, who are already familiar with the code and know where to put their hands, and get it done fairly quickly. So this is a little unusual for a university project to do this, but we felt that we needed to do this. Otherwise, our graduate students would never finish, right? They'd be doing software for the whole world. So now what we're trying to do is understand these cost-benefit trade-offs as seen in the total investment in the smartphones versus the entire system that's being put in place, as opposed to just comparing phone to phone, which is not a fair comparison. As you can see, we can probably do quite a few more things to streamline the system than are possible. This is one of our developers who's been contributing a lot of code. This is Sam Mbugua, who works with Ampath in Kenya. And he's one of our more prolific developers. And this is Sam getting feedback from one of his community health workers who's been using the system and complaining about some features. He did a very nice little system that let them, when you had to enter text for a question answer, they found that they were often entering the same text over and over again. And they just wanted a shortcut, like, can you show me, like, my most common answer that starts with a T, you know, so I can just select that. And so Sam wrote up a little thing that did that, for example, and made his clients a little happier. So we're also spreading out and getting some of this know-how into the countries where this work is actually happening with local people so that they can do this themselves for their own needs and not have to keep relying on us. So some testimonials. I'm not going to read through these. I'm just going to flash these up. But these are some comments that were made by the people at the UC Berkeley Human Rights Center that have been using our stuff in the Central African Republic. And, some of the things that we really like about this, an increase in data accuracy is an argument for spending the money on the phones. You know, now what we need to do is get the numbers out of these guys that say, well, why are you convinced of that? Right? Let's try to really document that. The other nice thing to see is things like, we found that we can look for errors in the methodology from the data.
make corrections to the, in the methodology, meaning the forms, so that the future data is clean. And they can get more refined about what they're doing very quickly, send out new forms right away, and get and improve that process. Okay, D-Tree International is another group. They do medical protocols, decision tree, and they've had good success with our stuff. You know, they mentioned specifically, you know, this has quick and easy user interaction. J2ME, you know, the feature phone stuff has its limitations. They were able to get what they wanted out of this with just a few lines of code. And this was when they were still designing the forms by hand without the web tool. They were actually writing the XML code for the forms and still found this easier. So now they're going to be ecstatic. You know, on the negative side, to be honest, right, there was a bit of technophobia by users. In fact, we experienced this as well. In Uganda, for example, people had never seen a touchscreen phone before, and there was a bit of apprehension about how that phone was sensing their touch, and was it extracting their blood or connecting to their blood in some way. And, you know, you have to do a little bit of education about these new technologies. Johns Hopkins has been a great example for us. It was great. Last October, I was at the Mobile Health Conference in D.C., and I had a poster for our work, and, you know, had been talking to people all day at my poster. And then one of the presentations that afternoon, this physician from Johns Hopkins gets up there, gives a presentation about these great tools they have for their people in Uganda, and showed a video of them using it. And when they took out the phone and were showing the phone screen that they were using, it said ODK right on the top, which was nice that they didn't change that, because I had a lot more people at my poster later that day. Okay. But these guys had reasons not to use our server solution. Actually, it wasn't totally available at the time, so they had went off and built their own server solution and were able to do that using PHP, because we use standard interfaces. We didn't have some proprietary system there. They were able to mix and match, and now are actually debating whether maybe they should do some kind of hybrid things, because they have different reasons for using different servers in different places. So now they have an alternative that they don't have to do from scratch. And then, of course, Ampath, that I mentioned already, they've been great, and, you know, they gave us this nice quote, limitless. They're having a good time with this stuff, and have actually trained over 200 community health workers now in how to use the stuff. And they said it shortened their training time from a week to 2 days, which, you know, when you take that cost involved, that pays for about half of the phone right there. So that was pretty nice. So future work that we're thinking about is, of course, demonstrate the value of this community-based approach and open-source-based approach. We're not equipped to evaluate the health and forestry results of the stuff I've shown you here, right? I'm using CSE grad students. Our job is not to figure out if we're saving more kids. We're going to rely on you people to do that. What we want to do is figure out with you if whether the cost is offset by some of the benefits. Are we getting increased efficiency? Are we able to see more patients? Are we able to contact more patients? Have a larger coverage area? Performance, are the decisions being made more quickly? Are things followed up on? Less stuff falling through cracks? Things like that. Those are the shorter term things that we can help evaluate. We're also continuing to inject new capabilities into the toolkit. And just as some quick examples, some of the things we're looking at are medical diagnostic tools. Actually getting to the, you might have read some stuff about like using the camera on the phone as a microscope. Well, what about having it do blood counts automatically from what it sees through that image, so that I can actually get data while I'm in the field and not have to wait about, you know, getting a sample back to a lab? As a measurement device, we want to be able to, for example, estimate the height of trees in a forest by pointing the phone's camera at it and saying, how high is that tree? Oh, thank you, right? What's the slope of that hill? We'd like to be able to get that information just from doing some image processing. We're also working with some remote monitoring solutions that use cheaper phones. and we built a little add-on board for very cheap phones. This board is only like $10, like $15. And the idea is that you can hook up other sensors to that. And we're working with PATH here in Seattle to do cold chain monitoring. So the idea is to stick a phone on the, with, you know, practically in the refrigerator and see how that vaccine is doing as it moves along. Does the temperature, how does the temperature change as it travels around? What happens every time the refrigerator door is open and then closed again? The temperature gets this big rise from the opening the door, and then you can look at the recovery rate of the refrigerator. You can actually estimate when the refrigerator is going to need servicing, how fast it recovers from a door opening event. So you can get a service person out there before the refrigerator fails, not after. Okay. So, you know, interesting little applications. There's another thought of using this for breast milk pasteurization to monitor the temperature cycle that you have to take breast milk through and actually coach the person in making sure it doesn't get too hot or it gets hot enough to kill AIDS viruses but not too hot to destroy the antibodies in the milk. So some interesting kinds of little things that are possible there. All right, so to close, you know, I hope I gave you a little bit of a sense for what we're working on. Hopefully, this might be of interest to some of you. We're interested in working with people. We'll put this into practice. We have a website you can go to get a lot more detail and all the code, including all the instructions for just downloading this onto your own Android phone. And, you know, our tagline is, you know, how do we magnify limited human resources in these environments through the introduction of this kind of technology? We're in situations where we have limited trained people to do the work that needs to be done. Just as a case in point, you know, there's one doctor for every 50,000 people in Tanzania. That would be like Seattle having 20 doctors total in the entire city. You know, we would be screaming if that was the case. And these people deal with it every day. And if we can do something to help people better make use of the few doctors they have, you can have a radical impact fairly quickly. So we're hoping that that's possible. So last thing is thank you. I'll take any questions you have in the time we have left. And I think we have about maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And I just wanted to call your attention to the change group. I think I made it big enough. Should be readable. This is a group of people from a variety of departments around campus, everything from the business school to computer science to the iSchool to the Evans School. And we're not getting enough of the health people involved. We'd like to change that. Change. Okay. And the website lists all of our events, and we have a weekly meeting every Thursday at noon. It's a lunchtime meeting. We provide some food, although lately it's been running out because we're getting more and more people attending, so we'll have to jack that number up. But we have talks on various topics. They're not all health-related, of course, but a lot of them are, and we'd love to see participation from your community as well. We have some of the attendees here, at least a couple of them. All right. So, yeah, questions?
I just wondered the extent to which you might be working with the Veterans Administration, which has a health record architecture that's a national model, and also the Department of Defense and the Indian Health Service, which have comparable models.
So it's interesting you should mention that. No, we haven't done any work yet to date with the Veterans Administration. But
private group called World Vista that's taken the VA's architecture and done a number of things, including things in Kenya and Uganda, and I didn't know whether Open EMR or
Open MRS.
Yeah. That was involved with any of their.
I don't know about that. I don't believe so. Open MRS is a community built system. I don't think the Veterans Administration has used. But obviously they're related. But it's interesting you should mention the Department of Defense, though, because there is an increasing interest in soldiers doing data collection for a variety of cases, including health-related things. And that's definitely a population that is under-trained medically.
but may be forced into a situation to have to make triage decisions of who to transport back, when and how, and under what constraints. And they're interested in looking at some of this stuff. So we've had some discussions.
Oh, well, because they've been interested in about 30 years in field medical care.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is now targeting more the population that they're invading rather than the soldiers themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, so I, being kind of a device geek and sensitive to the fact that these high-end devices cost still $500-$600 or more, do you have a sense of putting together like a minimum hardware spec or envisioning what a minimum hardware spec might look like and that people are going to be able to start manufacturing devices with the right minimum set? And
there's a lot of people doing that. There's a lot of people doing that. So this is probably the highest end Android phone. This is the Nexus One right now. It's probably the highest end Android phone. Has a gigahertz processor in it. Can do an amazing amount of image processing, for example. So we can do those kinds of things I was mentioning. By the summer, this will be a 2 gigahertz dual core processor. It's going to be better than the PC you had on your desk 3 years ago. You know, it's a pretty capable device. Clearly, you don't have to go that high. There's a lot of stuff throughout a spectrum. What the Android platform is insisting on is that every phone have a camera. Every phone have GPS. Every phone have Wi-Fi capability. And that will keep the cost a little higher than some of those, you know, phones done for cheapness. They're going more for experience. So there's always going to be a little bit of a split there. But we really do believe the cost is small. And as you saw from some of the examples I had, we're doing things to connect to that other class of phones and create an ecosystem that uses a mix of devices that doesn't have to rely on one. Yeah.
Yeah, just a question, which is that, I mean, the examples you gave were all in resource-constrained environments outside the U.S.
Right.
There's a lot of resource-constrained environments inside the U.S. And
I was
just wondering, has this been deployed in the U.S. In the healthcare space? Or?
Yeah, so I'm actually just started doing some work with a little company in Washington State that does tools for monitoring school dispensation of medications, nursing home dispensing of medications. And they want to keep track of, you know, who's getting what medications, when, under what conditions, maybe even some simple observations. You can imagine that, for example, for diabetics, this is particularly important, where you want to know what their blood sugar was before you gave them an insulin product or something. They're actually looking at doing this with now lightly trained people being school administrators who have to dispense medication, nursing home workers who have to give somebody, an elderly person, all of their meds. And are they doing the right thing and looking for the right signs and so on. So, yeah, that stuff is starting to happen. Yeah. I can give people a demo, by the way, afterwards if you want to see it. So, yeah.
Have you had any experience with longer forms?
Excuse me?
Longer
forms. Our longest form that we've put on this thing is 300 questions. And that's the IMCI protocol. So on any one traversal of the protocol, you wouldn't see all 300. Because depending on how you're answering a question, you're navigating through the form, right? So you're skipping over pages, just like you would if it would have been on paper. You know, if you answered yes on question 7, skip to question 43. You know, and you jump over a whole bunch of stuff. So, but 300's been about the limit. And you can do it on these devices. You know, it varies so much depending on the particular application. There's nothing I can tell you that isn't really tied to a specific case. You know, most people do try to keep the forms as short as possible, obviously, because they want to make it easy to use and quick. And compared to, though, using forms on a cheaper phone where you have to hit like 7 buttons for each question,
The interaction on here, and you can come and see it afterwards, is way, way faster. So we can actually probably go a lot bigger forms without that stuff. Also, these forms can do stuff automatically. So if it gets to a form that says get a location, it can just get the location. It doesn't have to ask you for it. Before, we used to have to ask you for it. You had to get a separate GPS unit. You'd have to look at the numbers there, type them into the other system, make a whole bunch of mistakes, you know, take half a day. Certainly took a lot of training to get people to do that right. Now it just does it in the background. Get location, done, it's in there. You don't even know if it happened. Again, that's very application dependent. You know, one of the biggest problems we have is patient identification, just getting the patient properly identified. And there's some experimentation that needs to be done there with various things. You know, some countries are much further ahead. They have people with barcodes or ID numbers, at least, that can be entered. Other countries don't, and even if they do have those ID numbers, you don't know if they're giving you their ID number or their cousin's ID number. They just came in because they needed to get some pills or something.
What I just wanted to say was, I think since it looks like there's people trying to come in here, we should probably do wrap up the public question session and give a round of thanks.
Yeah, please feel free to come up if you want to take a look at this.
I just want to figure out if there's one person or multiple.
I'll give you a spare.
Thanks for your...
Okay, thank you.
Hey, good time. How are you doing?
All right, how are you? You were asking about. So here's this is, you know, the ODK collapse.